She went to the office first thing, before class started in the morning, hoping she would not even run into Trevor and that he would never have to know she'd been there. The office lady told her to go right up. She got halfway through the door into his classroom, stopped, and misplaced all that good steam she had built up. First of all, though it wasn't the most important part, he was black. She did not feel so very different about black people. It wasn't that. It was more that she tried so hard to bend over backward to show she wasn't like that. After a while, it became hard to act natural. So she would try harder. And there you have a losing battle, if ever there was one. Trying hard to act natural. That can have you chasing your tail until long after the sun goes down. So, right off the bat, it made him hard to yell at. He might think she fancied herself better than him, where really it was more that it was her boy, and also her tax dollars paying his salary. Any teacher's salary, that is. So he looked up, and she still had nothing to say. Nothing. 100% card-carrying speechless. And not mostly over any racial issues, either, but more because she had never seen a man with only half a face. It's one of those things. Takes a minute to adjust to. And she knew if she took even 1 minute more, he would notice that she had noticed his unfortunate scarring, which would be just plain rude. This whole scene had all gone very smoothly in her mind on the way to school, where she had been angry, articulate, and really quite good. She moved through the room toward his desk, feeling small, feeling like 25 years ago when these desks were too big to fit her. And he was still waiting for something to be said.
"What's paying forward?"
"Excuse me?"
"That expression, paying forward, what does it mean?"
"I give up. What does it mean?"
He seemed mildly curious toward her, slightly amused, and as a result, miles above her, making her feel small and ignorant. He was a big man, and not only in physical stature, although that too.
"That's what you're supposed to tell me."
"I would love to, madam, if I knew. If you don't mind my asking, who are you?"
"I forget to say that. Excuse me. Arlene McKinney."
She reached her hand out, and he shook it. Trying not to look at his face, she noticed that his left arm was deformed somehow, the wrong size, which gave her the shivers for just a second.
"My boy is in your social studies class, Trevor."
Something came onto his face then, a positive recognition, which, being connected in some way to her boy, made her like this man better.
"Trevor, yes. I like Trevor. I particularly like him. Very honest and direct."
Arlene tried for a little sarcastic laugh, but it came out a snort, a pig sound, and she could feel her face turn red because of it.
"Yeah, he's all of that all right. Only you say it's like it's a good thing."
"It is, I think. Now, what's this about paying forward? I'm supposed to know something about that?"
Actually, she'd been hoping for a laugh, a smile, something beside his business-like manner. A bad sense was forming of Mr. St. Clair, looking down his nose at her in some way she could never entirely prove.
"It has something to do with an assignment you gave out. That's what Trevor said. He said it was a project for your social studies class."
Yes, the assignment."
He moved to the blackboard, and she swung out of his way as though there were a big wind around him that kept her from getting too close.
"I'll write it out for you, exactly as I did for the class. It's very simple."
And he did. Think of an idea for world change and put it into action. He set his chalk down and turned back.
"That's all it is? This paying forward must be Trevor's own idea."
"That's all it is? That's all?"
Arlene could feel a pressure building around her ears, that clean, satisfying anger she'd come here to vent.
"You just want them to change the world. Oh, that's all. Well, I'm glad you didn't give them anything hard."
"Mrs. McKinney."
"Miss McKinney, I am on my own. Now you listen here. Trevor is 12 years old, and you want him to change the world? I never heard such bull."
"First of all, it's a voluntary assignment for extra credit. If a student finds the idea overwhelming, he or she need not participate. Second of all, what I want is for the students to re-examine their role in the world and think of ways one person can make a difference. It's a very healthy exercise."
"So is climbing Mount Everest, but that might be too much for the poor little guy, too. Did you know Trevor has taken a bum under his wing and brought him into my house? This man could be a rapist or a child molester or an alcoholic."
She wanted to say more, but was busy thinking that since she herself was an alcoholic, that might have been a bad example.
What do you suggest I do about the problems you've caused?
I suggest that you talk to him. Lay down the house rules. Tell him when his efforts on this project conflict with your safety and comfort. You do talk to him, don't you?
What the hell kind of a question is that? Of course I talk to him.
It just seems odd that you would come all the way down here to find out what paying forward is, when Trevor could tell you.
Leaving the room was becoming a more and more appealing option. I guess this was a mistake. Obviously, nothing was being accomplished here, except for the ongoing process that was making Arlene feel stupid and small.
Miss McKinney?
His voice hit her back a few steps into a long stride to safety and freedom. She almost kept walking, but like ignoring a ringing phone, it was too contrary to human nature. She spun around to face this man, whom she openly, immediately disliked, and not because of his face or his color either. What?
I hope you'll forgive my asking this, but is Trevor's father dead?
Arlene blinked as though she had been slapped. No, of course not. I hope not. Did Trevor tell you that?
No. He said something strange. He said, we don't know where he is. I thought maybe he was being euphemistic.
Well, we don't know where he is.
Oh, well, I'm sorry. I just wondered.
Bewildered now, she struck for the door, and nothing could have stopped her. What a way to feel like a complete idiot. Not only did she just admit that the father of her child hadn't so much as sent a Christmas card home, but now she'd have to go find a dictionary and look up the word euphemistic. See what he'd just accused her son of being. It better not have been an insult, that's all she could think. From the Diary of Trevor.
Sometimes I think this idea is going to be so great, and maybe it is. But then other times I remember other things I thought would be great. Like when I was real young, like 10 or something. And now that I'm big, I can see what a crock it is. So then I think, what if this all bombs out? Then Mr. St. Clair won't be all impressed with me. And then in a few years I'll look back and think, boy, was I stupid. It's really hard to know what's a good idea when you're growing and these ideas don't hold still, and neither do you. Mom hates Jerry, which is funny because he's a lot like Dad, except Dad is cleaner. But if Mom would let Jerry in the house, he'd be cleaner too. Maybe if she didn't keep letting Dad in, he'd look just like Jerry. Maybe. Wherever he is, he already does.
Chapter 5. Jerry. He was just getting set to bunk down for the night, and there she was, like the damn police. Or the landlord of a building whose celery might try to use for shelter. Like she'd made up her mind. He was a bug, and she didn't want her damn place infested. He'd just gotten done on the truck, taking the engine loose. Not from his mounts, but unhooking all the smog and the wiring, all of which there was way too much of. Not like the old days, the way they made them anymore, like a piece of crap. And he'd gone into the garage, rolled out an old oriental rug in a corner, against a wall, barely got his eyes closed. She came in, flipped on the lights, made him blink.
It's only me, ma'am. Jerry, just taking a quick break. Just nap. Then I'll get some more work done on your truck.
I know you've been living here, in my garage.
No, ma'am, just a quick nap.
Then where are you staying?
Down at the shop where I work. They let me sleep on the couch in the waiting room.
Get up. I'll drive you down there.
Damn.
There were two bad things about the way she treated him. One was, she was so damn pretty. Didn't look old enough to have a kid Trevor's age. Late 20s from the look. And real small and cute, built like a little doll. Until she opened her mouth. Personality like an Amazon. Someone 10 times her size. But she was so damn pretty. If they were in a bar together and he had enough money on him to buy them both a drink, if things weren't like this, like they really were right now, it wasn't so out of the question. The other bad thing about treating him like vermin was that he couldn't really hold it against her. Couldn't argue against it, because how? With what? Getting into her car, her in the driver's seat, the dome light on as he got in beside her, he saw her face clear. Looking at her, he thought, you and me, we're not so very different. Maybe you know it. but he knew better than to say it out loud. They drove in silence down the Camino, the main street of town. A ghost town at this hour. The street was long and deserted, with traffic lights changing color for no reason he could see.
Damn good car you got here.
Old green Dodge Dart. Serve you forever if you took care of it. Hell, even if you didn't.
That supposed to be some kind of sarcastic?
No, ma'am. I mean it for a fact. That slant six engine, best they ever made. Couldn't kill it if you tried.
You might want to, though, sometimes. What you got out of her was always harder, colder than what you were set to expect. Pretty lady, though. Cute.
I know you don't like me.
It's not that.
What then?
Look, Jerry. Standing at a red light, idling, even though there was no one around. No one to go on the green while they waited. I'm trying to raise that boy on my own. No help from nobody. I can't watch him all the time.
I don't mean no harm to your son.
You don't mean none. Light turned, squeal of her tires. Just hit the gas too sudden. She pulled up in front of the Quickie Lube and Tune. It was cold out there. He didn't want to get out. Kind of thought he wouldn't have to. Anymore. No more sleeping out in the cold. He didn't really have the key to the shop. Would never in a million years have told his bosses he needed that couch to sleep on.
Thanks for the ride, ma'am.
I don't have anything against you personally. I don't.
Right. Whatever.
He stepped out of the warm car. Into the wind. A minute later, she was behind him.
Look, Jerry, in a different world, who knows? We could have been friends even. It's just that...
He spun around. She had to look at his face. Only for a second. Then at his shoes. If only she wouldn't have looked at his shoes. He hadn't had enough money to replace the old sneakers. Saw a great pair of lace-up work boots, but couldn't afford them. But tomorrow would be payday. No, today. It was after 3 a.m. Later today, work boots.
Pleased to hear you say that, ma'am. The way you've been acting, I'd have thought only one of us is people.
I never meant that.
Never meant it.
She turned to go back to the car. He turned to watch her go. So they both saw it, like a long streak starting at the top of the sky, drifting down but fast, lighting up the sky like lightning, a ball of fire with a tail.
Holy cow, she said. Did you see that? What was that, a comet?
A meteor, maybe, I don't know. When I was a kid, we used to call that a falling star. I used to think if you saw one, you'd get your wish. You know, like all your dreams had come true.
She turned back to look at him, all softness in her face. Maybe it had never occurred to her that bums used to be kids, or wanted their dreams to come true, like everybody. She said,
"Don't you hate moments like this?"
What moments is those, ma'am?
When you get that feeling like we're all just the same?
Well, no, ma'am. I like 'em.
Well, good luck.
Ma'am?
What?
I get my first paycheck today, and I'll go get a cheap room, be out of your hair. Your boy won't be sorry he made the effort. I don't think you will either. I'll do just what I'm supposed to do. Pass it along, you know.
She stood there a long time, like she was trying to decide whether to say something or not. And she said it.
Will you explain to me about that? How that paying forward thing goes?
He kind of blinked.
Didn't he tell you?
I didn't exactly ask.
From Those Who Knew Trevor Speak.
So I explained paying forward to her. I got me a stick, sketched it out in the dirt, in the dark. We both had to squint to see. It was cold, but she had a choice. Could have been a home in a warm house. Well, that made a difference.
How do I know why?
I drew them three circles and explained them, like the kid explained them to me. See, this one, that's me, I said. These other two, I don't know, two other somebodies, I guess, that he's going to help. See, the trick is, it's something big. You know, a big help, like you wouldn't do for just anybody. Maybe your mother or your sister, but not nobody else. He does that for me. I got to do it for three others. Other two, they got to do it for three others. Those 9 others, they gotta do it for 3 others, each. That makes 27. Now, I ain't so good with math, but that kid, he worked it out. It gets real big real fast. Like, you can't believe how fast. Up in the thousands in no time. So I'm on my knees there, drawing all these circles in the dirt, counting by 3s, running out of dirt. You can't believe how fast. And you know, it happened again. And we both saw it, you know, a big comet or whatever. Did I mention about that first comet we saw? Huh, I guess I did. So we see another comet, falling star, falling, shooting, I don't know. But I ain't never seen 2 all in one night. It was kind of spooky. We're looking at these circles, thinking this whole thing could be great. Except it won't be, because, well, we all know it won't, because people, they're no good. They won't really pay you forward. They'll take your help, but that's all. I know we were both thinking that. And then the sky lit up again. That big comet. Well, the second one, I mean. I ain't saying there was a third. Well, maybe I made it sound that way, but 2 anyway. Well, that's a lot. Spooky. You know, it's a big world out there. Bigger than we think, huh? Well, then she starts to tell me it's hard for her to talk to that kid. I couldn't believe it. Telling me. Me. She says he's just like his father that way. She hates to question him, can't get mad at him, don't want to seem like she don't trust him. So, things just go by. She just lets him go by. She told me all this. It's like we were, I don't know, communicating. For the first time. About all kinds of stuff. That was so amazing. I told her I was going to do big things. Maybe not big to somebody else, but for where I was. Get me an apartment, drive a Dodge Dart. She said I could have hers. Dirt cheap. I told her again how it was payday. Payday. The day everything changes. After a while, it was all the same stuff we were saying. Over and over. But I liked it anyway. After a while, she went home, but after that, the night was, like, different. Like, not so, you know, cold or something.
At 9:30, he got his paycheck. Didn't have to stay and work that day or the next. So he took it to the bank. Way over $100, cash in his hand. Time to buy work boots. He stood at the bus stop a while. Too long. But it was a nice day. He could walk down to the Kmart. Walking with all that money, that big lump in his pocket. And he'd earned it, too. A whole new day. Comets in the night. Who knows? Then he walked by Stanley's, that little bar he used to like. Thought a beer would go nice. Good day, pocket full of money. If you can't take a minute to celebrate over a beer, then why? Then what was it all for? And he was right. It went down real nice. Saw 2 of the guys, too. Bet he knew them when he was mostly on his feet. And now he was on them again. And they never had to know otherwise. They wanted to know where he'd been. San Francisco, he said. Because he'd always wanted to go there. Bought them each a beer so they would know he could. So would see that roll come out of his pocket, unfold real nice. Bought himself another one so they would see he was in no hurry. No place he really had to be. Yes, sir. New day for sure. They played a game of pool or 2 for money. Then one of them phoned up Tito, the guy they used to know. Told him Jerry was loaded. Come on down. He did. With some product. Said to Jerry, I know you're looking to buy. Don't tell me you don't got a taste for the stuff.
Not no more, Jerry said.
Ah, come on. So they played a few more games of pool. The other 3 went into the bathroom to fix. That didn't seem fair. They could and he couldn't. How is that fair? I mean, what is the point, really? Why have a whole new world all caught up in rules? Where you can't even feel good. Have what you like. So he had another beer, and Tito came back out. And Jerry said, maybe just a dime back. Not enough to get in trouble on. Not so much that he couldn't afford the boots.
It was his day off, after all. Had to borrow a rig off Tito. Didn't even have his own. Didn't know how much he missed that little sting. That needle sting. Till he felt it again. Then it was closing time. Huh. How could that be? It was just yesterday morning, a minute ago. What day was it now? Then it was a whole day later in a Denny's, drinking coffee. Hungry now, with stubble on his face. Sick. Feeling bad. Breakfast. That would have gone good. But he couldn't have any. Because that cup of coffee had tapped him out. Dug deep in his pockets twice, but it was no use. That money was all used up.
Chapter 6. Reuben. When he arrived in his classroom on a Monday morning, Trevor was already seated. He'd taken a place in the front row, which he had never done before. They looked at each other briefly, Reuben sensing something unsaid on the boy's part.
"What's on your mind this morning, Trevor?"
"Mr. St. Clair, are you married?"
"No, I'm not."
"Do you ever wish you were?"
Reuben remembered Trevor's mother standing in his classroom, remembered something she'd said when he referred to her son as very honest and direct. "Yeah, he's all of that all right, only you say it like it's a good thing." In fact, Reuben remembered Trevor's mother often. At odd moments, with no seeming connection, she would return in memory. How like a little storm cloud she'd blown into his classroom one morning.
"Well, that's a hard question to answer, Trevor. I mean, there's marriage, and then there's marriage."
"Huh?"
"There are good ones and bad ones."
"Do you sometimes wish you had a good one?"
"Okay, I give up. What's this all about?"
"Nothing. I just wondered."
Marianne Tellman wandered in. Not surprising that she would be the next to arrive. She was the only other student that Reuben knew for sure had accepted his extra credit assignment, because she'd stayed after class one day and described it at great length. A recycling project. She was a cute, popular girl, very white, very potential cheerleader, about which Reuben tried to hold an open mind. But her approach to his class and assignment seemed insincere and staged, reminding him that Trevor's project remained secret. And a good secret it might prove to be. Paying forward. He should have asked about that before the rest of the class began to arrive, but Trevor's agenda had thrown him off his game. After class, Trevor filed out last, and Reuben raised a hand to flag him down, opened his mouth to call Trevor's name. But once again, Trevor proved quicker on the draw.
"I want to talk to you again,"
Trevor said, turning and stopping in front of Reuben's desk. He jammed his hands deep into his pockets and waited until the last of the other students had gone. Little sweeps of his eyes and a slight rocking on his heels revealed something, but Reuben wasn't sure he could properly decipher it. A little nervousness, maybe. Finally, convinced that they were alone, Trevor said,
"My mom wants to know if you'll come to dinner tomorrow night."
"She said that?"
"Yeah, she said that."
And that little place in Reuben, the one he could never properly train, jumped up to meet her kindness, despite his caution. Maybe she didn't dislike him as much as he thought. But even Reuben's heart could sense when something didn't fit.
"Why does she want me to come to dinner?"
"I don't know. Why not?"
"She doesn't like me very much."
"You met my mom?"
"I met her temper, yes."
"Well, maybe she wants to talk about Jerry. My friend Jerry, he's part of my project, but she doesn't like him at all. I think she wants you to help her, you know, sort of work it out about that."
This invitation was becoming grounded now in Reuben's mind, in something that made sense and fit with everything else he knew so far.
"Couldn't we have a little private parent-teacher conference here at school?"
"Oh, here at school? Well, I asked her, but she said, you know, she worked so hard and all, two jobs. She just said it would be nice if you could come over."
"I guess that would be okay. What time?"
I'll have to ask her. I'll let you know tomorrow."
The following morning, early, just before his first class, it happened again. Lightning striking twice in the same place.
She was angry again, and Reuben wondered if she had ever settled down in between. He didn't even have to open his mouth this time because her anger was all prearranged and complete, needing only to be delivered. Reuben admired that in her. Envied it, actually. Maybe even felt tempted to ask for lessons. She'd be a good tutor in righteous indignation for people like Reuben, who had no natural talent in the field. And she was pretty, but not the kind that made him hurt.
Why did you tell my boy we had to meet at my house?
I didn't. I didn't say we had to meet at all.
What, you didn't?
She stopped in mid-charge, obviously thrown. Her anger, a sudden liability, all fired up with no target.
Trevor told me to make chicken fajitas because you were coming for dinner, because you wanted to talk to me about his project.
Really?
Interesting.
He told me that you invited me over for dinner, and he thought it was because you wanted to talk to me about his project.
Well, what the hell's he doing then?
She said disconnectedly, as if Reuben were not in the room at all.
Maybe he wants to talk to both of us about the project.
But why not here at school?
He said you work two jobs and it would be easier if I came to the house.
I'm here, aren't I?
I'm only telling you what he said.
Oh, okay. Well, why's he trying to get you over then?
It would be a risk to say it, but Reuben guessed that he probably would anyway. It would get her going again, most likely, which was okay because he didn't mind her anger. It was clean and open, and you could always see it coming.
Yesterday morning he asked me if I was married. Then he asked me if I'd like to be.
So?
I'm just speculating.
Well, he was probably just curious. I'm telling you, that kid don't never know when to keep shut.
I just thought...
What?
I just thought he might be trying to fix us up.
Us?
She seemed to freeze in place, everything running across her face at once, waiting to be read. Another risk, another defacing for which he'd left himself open. Us. You must be joking.
I realize we're the world's most unlikely couple, but after all, he is just a boy.
He watched her stumble back up through herself, clumsily, to a place that could speak again.
Trevor would never do such a thing. He knows his daddy is going to come home.
Just speculating.
Why did you even say you would come to dinner?
I felt guilty after you left last time. You were asking me to help straighten out some problems that might have been caused by my assignment. I'm afraid I was a little dismissive.
A beam of morning sun slanting through the window caught Arlene and made her brighter than anything else in the room. It glowed on a strip of bare midriff below her lacy tank top. Untanned, vulnerable skin, like a china doll's. Something fragile, relegated to the shelf for fear of breakage and handling. She appeared so vulnerable until she opened her mouth.
I know you don't like me.
It was the last thing Reuben expected her to say, especially as he admired her. He felt transparent at almost all times, yet his intentions never seemed to be correctly read by those around him, not even at close range.
What makes you think that?
She made that noise again, that rude little snort.
You just said we're the most unlikely couple in the world. What does that mean if you're not looking down on me?
It means I assumed you were looking down on me. It means I knew you were thinking it, so I had to say it. But Reuben couldn't bring himself to give those answers. So she went on.
You think I'm too stupid to see the way you look down on me? Well, I may not have your education, I may not talk good like you, but that don't mean I'm stupid.
I never said you were stupid.
You didn't have to.
I never thought it either. It never occurred to me to wonder how much education you have. I think you're being overly sensitive.
What the hell would you know about what I'm feeling?
When it comes to oversensitivity, I'm something of an expert. Anyway, none of this was my idea, and if you don't want me in your house, I won't come.
You know what? That's okay. Truth is,
Reuben knew from her pause, the strain in her face, that if she ever finished this sentence, she'd tell him something difficult, something that was hard for her to say to anyone, but particularly to him.
Truth is, I'm not doing so good talking to him about this. I could use the help. 6 o'clock?
From Those Who Knew Trevor Speak.
I went to her house. It wasn't at all what I expected. Her house. Well, any of it, but I meant her house. That made me examine my own expectations and admit that perhaps, in some small way, I had been guilty of looking down on her. Though God knows I never meant to. It was a modest house, but scrupulously clean inside and out, and fussed over and tended. No plant life growing over the walkway, not a single streak on those white-trimmed window panes. Except for a wrecked truck in the driveway, every part of her home existence brought back an expression my mother used to use in reference to herself. House proud. I never expected her to remind me of my mother. Now, the whole thing made me nervous. Her pride in her home reminded me of the pride that flew behind all that rage of hers, which made me feel overmatched and overwhelmed, as if I'd relinquished strength by meeting on her home turf. She answered the door looking distressingly nice. She was wearing this blousy, cottony dress in a flower print, as if she took dinner guests rather seriously. I stepped into her living room, holding flowers that I couldn't bring myself to give her. Frozen. Every part of me frozen. For the longest time, neither of us could seem to talk about anything. And then Trevor showed up. Thank God. As soon as Arlene cleared the dinner dishes from the table, Trevor ran to his room and got his calculator. He'd put off explaining his project all through dinner because, he said, it was too hard to explain without a calculator.
This all started with something Daddy taught me.
Arlene's ears picked up at that, and she pulled her chair around, as if to watch the calculator over his shoulder.
Remember that riddle he used to do? Remember that, Mom? Well, I don't know, honey. He knew a lot of riddles.
Reuben's stomach felt warm and nicely full. He watched them both across the table, feeling surprisingly relaxed. The flowers he'd brought her sat in a vase on the table. Not roses, that would have been too personal, too much. A mix of dried flowers and sunny things, daisies and the like, which he'd presented with an apology for having made a bad first impression. Intended only as a friendly gesture, it had embarrassed her and made them both feel awkward. It had been a mistake, one he'd take back if he could, and every glance at them sitting in the porcelain vase reminded him that he could not.
Remember that one about working for 30 days? No, Trevor, I don't think I do.
Their voices seemed a little distant to Reuben, who felt himself becoming disconnected from the scene in a subtle way.
Remember, he said if you were going to work for somebody for 30 days and you had a choice, you could take $100 a day, or you could take $1 the first day, and then it would be doubled every day. I said I'd take $100 a day, but he said I'd lose out. So I worked it out on my calculator. $100 a day for 30 days is $3,000. But if you double that dollar every day, you'd make over $500 million on your last day. Not to mention everything between. That's how I thought of my idea for Mr. St. Clair's class. You see, I do something real good for three people. And then when they ask how they can pay it back, I say they have to pay it forward to three more people, each. So 9 people get helped. Then those people have to do 27.
He turned on the calculator, punched in a few numbers.
Then it sort of spreads out, see? To 81, then 243, then 729, then 2,187. You see how big it gets? But, honey, there's just one little problem with that. What, Mom? I'm sure Mr. St. Clair will explain it to you.
Reuben jumped at the mention of his name.
I will?
Yes. Tell him what's wrong with the plan.
I think your mother is upset because, even though it's good to want to help Jerry, she's worried about that situation.
No, no, not that, Trevor. I know I gave you a hard time about Jerry, but then I had a long talk with him, and I might have been wrong about him. He's a pretty nice guy. Besides, I think he got a place to live. He hasn't been around for a few days.
Trevor's forehead furrowed down, and he clicked off the calculator.
Actually, he sort of got arrested. For what?
Arlene said suddenly, and sounding startled. Reuben saw, for a brief flash, her genuine disappointment sense some thin cord between her and this faceless man. Something that might have caused her, just for an instant, to be on Jerry's team.
I'm not sure. I went by his work. They said he never came back after they paid him. They said he got picked up on some kind of violation. Honey, I'm sorry.
See, that is the very part Mr. St. Clair is about to explain to you.
Reuben took his napkin off his lap and threw it on the table. This pattern between Arlene and her son, it had not only come deadly clear, it had come around to bite him. Here's Mr. St. Clair, son, to tell you all the things you don't want to hear. I'm sorry, Miss McKinney, if you want your son to believe that people are basically selfish and unresponsive, you'll have to tell him so yourself. He smiled tightly and shook his head, saying nothing. She fixed him with a look that burned in silence, but he was not afraid of her anger, or so he intended to prove to them both. So he noted instead that her eyes were almost the same color of brown as her short baby fine hair.
"Well, Trevor," she said, "I think it's a good project. Tell us some more about it."
So Trevor explained, with the help of his calculator, how big this thing could become. Somewhere around the 16th level, at which he'd involved 43,046,721 people, the calculator proved smaller than Trevor's optimism. But he was convinced that in just a few more levels, the numbers would be larger than the population of the world.
"Then you know what happens?"
Arlene looked to Reuben, but he didn't care to guess, wanting to hear it straight from Trevor's obviously active brain.
"No, honey, what?" "Then everybody gets help more than once, and then it gets bigger even faster." "What do you think, Mr. St. Clair?"
Arlene clearly wanted something from him, but he wasn't sure from minute to minute what that something might be.
"I think it's a noble idea, Trevor. A big effort. Big efforts lead to good grades. How do you feel about the fact that Jerry got arrested?"
Trevor sighed. From the look on Arlene's face, Reuben had done his job correctly for a change.
"It's okay, I guess. Except I just have to start all over, is all. It's okay, though. I already got other ideas."
"Like what, honey?"
Arlene asked in that sugary voice she slipped into when questioning her own son.
"It's a secret. Can I be excused?"
Arlene caught Reuben's eye again, begging for something. As if she could not just say, "No, young man, we are not done here." Reuben only shrugged.
"Okay, run along then, honey."
Trevor charged in the direction of his bedroom, but as he barreled by Reuben's seat, Reuben took him gently by the sleeve and pulled him over close enough that Arlene, on the other side of the table, hopefully would not hear.
"You can't orchestrate love, Trevor."
"Huh? What's orchestrate?"
"You can't make it happen for somebody else."
"Doesn't that have something to do with music?"
"Not always."
"Huh. You can't, huh? I mean, oh, okay. Well, that wasn't my idea, though. Anyway."
"Just checking."
Reuben loosed his sleeve and he disappeared. Reuben looked up to see Arlene glaring across the table with that mixture of stress and anger and rocket fuel to which he was becoming nicely accustomed.
"What'd you say to him?"
"It's a secret. May I be excused?"
From The Diary of Trevor.
"Mom and Mr. St. Clair like each other. I just know it. What I can't figure out is, why don't they know it? It's right there. And I just feel like shaking them and saying, oh, just admit it. Mr. St. Clair would be nice to her, I think. I think he'd give his entire heart to somebody who would say, you know, that's a nice half a face you got there. You know, like the glass is half full instead of, well, you know." He's sad about his face. I think if he wasn't, he could admit it better when he likes somebody. But then my mom has a great face, and she's doing it, too. Go figure. What if the world really changed because of my project? Wouldn't that be the coolest thing? Then everybody would say, who cares about his face? He's the best teacher in the world. That's what matters. That would be so cool. I think the best shot I got now for my project is Mrs. Greenberg. Jerry got arrested. Mr. St. Clair says you can't orchestrate love, which made it sound like I was trying to wave a baton around or something. But so far, it looks like he's right. But a garden. A garden holds still for all that orchestra stuff.
Chapter 7. Mrs. Greenberg. Her late husband, Martin, had believed in miracles, but the cancer took him just the same. Since he'd gone, she'd tried to bring that belief around again, thinking it to be natural to the family,
divinely intended to live in her little blue-gray house. And this evening, for the first time in years, it sat on the porch swing with her as she sipped her iced tea. It smiled for her and through her, and she smiled back. A miracle in the shape of her garden. Lately, she'd begun to dream of waking up, stretching and flexing through the pain in her arthritic joints, easing to the window to discover that, as if by magic, the garden was once again whole. And now, in the dusk of a cool spring evening, the garden was whole. Trimmed, the grass mowed, beds laid with fresh cedar chips, freshly raked bags of leaves and trimmings bundled at the curb, soon to be trash day history. Not an unexplained miracle, exactly, because she'd watched the neighbor boy do it all, day after day. Barely a head taller than he, she'd stood at his side and shown him the junctions at which rose bushes begged to be trimmed and the aphids to be sprayed, and the weeds that had to come out and the ground cover meant to be cut back, watered, encouraged to flourish. But miracles can and do have middlemen, she decided. And then she noticed that her iced tea tasted sweeter than usual that night, though made to the same proportions, and that the cold glass did not ache her arthritis the way it usually did. And as if to dampen this perfect balance, just the moment she'd discovered it, her son, Richard Green, came up the walk for his bi-monthly visit. How a woman named Greenberg had a son named Green was beyond her, but it was his legal name, though she would never call him by it. He had turned his back on the name of his father, her late husband, as if in shame, and the thought of it swept through her scalp the way a migraine would every time, dividing her brain for the exquisite ache to follow. He walked like James Dean, or half like him, with all of the ego and none of the grace. And every time he came to visit, he looked more and more like Elvis, with his big, unruly sideburns. Even on a cool spring night, he wore those sleeveless muscle tees, unflattering to his hairy shoulders, and sunglasses, despite the fading light. He'd been a smart boy, Richard, a brilliant boy, but seemingly with no payoff. Unlike the neighbor boy, who appeared quite simple, and average in intelligence, it seemed to prove otherwise with his very willingness to be where he was needed. At 42, Richard was not a willing man, nor was he serious, unless anxious counts, and not particularly cheerful or helpful. But maybe intelligence is not associated with cheerful willingness. Too bad she could not trade in Richard's intelligence at this late date. Seemed his only real purpose was to lose him every job he ever tried, being too good as he was for all of them. And she had no more money to lend him, and would not if she could. He stood on her porch step, a cigarette tucked high in the crook of his first two fingers.
Hi, Mom.
So, what do you think?
About what?
The garden.
He spun on the heels of his two-tone leather boots and flipped his dark glasses up to the top of his thin hairline.
Shit. You paid somebody. I told you I'd do it.
I didn't pay.
You did it yourself? Oh, come on. You can't even make a fist.
The neighbor boy did it for free.
Very funny.
He did.
It must have taken hours.
He's been working for days. You haven't been around.
I told you I'd do it.
Yes, you told me. But you didn't do it.
Oh, shit.
He walked inside and flipped on the TV to a MASH rerun. And though she called after him to extinguish his cigarette, he failed to hear her. Or pretended not to. And then, when she followed him in and sprayed all around the clean living room area with pine scent Glade, he complained bitterly about the smell and said it made him cough. At first, he'd just come by to talk, and that was good enough, and Mrs. Greenberg had never expected more. She was right near the end of his paper route, which he changed around just a little so her house would be the very last. He'd leave his big, heavy old bicycle on its side on her lawn and bring the paper right to her door and knock, knowing, as he did, that it was a bother for her to go out after it. She was so pleased by his thoughtful attention that she always offered him a glass of cherry Kool-Aid, which she bought specially for him, and he'd sit at her kitchen table and talk to her, about school mostly, and football,
and then a special project he had thought of for his social studies class, and how he needed more people he could help. And she said she had some gardening to be done, though she couldn't afford to pay much. He said she wasn't to pay anything at all to him, and what she paid to others needn't be money, unless that was what she had plenty of. And then he drew some circles for her on a piece of paper, with her name in one, and told her about paying forward.
It's like random acts of kindness, she'd said.
But he disagreed. It was not random, not at all, and therein lay its beauty, built right into the sweet organization of the deal. It was a foggy Saturday morning when he came by, 6 o'clock, sharp, as promised, and they stood in the mist in the front yard, the blue-gray paint peeling from her worried little house, and the smell of damp in the air, and little drips from the oak trees overhead, cool in her hair. He touched the roses as if they were puppies with her eyes still closed, or rare old books edged in gold leaf, and she knew he'd love her garden, and it would love him back, and that something was being returned to her which had been away too long and had kept too much of her away with it.
"How is the project going so far?"
she said, because she could see it was important to him, a subject he liked to talk a lot about. His brow furrowed, and he said,
"Not so good, Mrs. Greenberg. Not so good,"
he said.
"Do you think that maybe people won't really pay it forward? That maybe they'll just say they will, or even sort of mean to, but maybe something will go wrong, or maybe they'll just never get around to it?"
She knew it was a genuine problem in his mind, one of those Santa Claus crossroads of childhood that shape or destroy a person's faith forevermore. And this boy was too good to turn astray. So she said,
"I can only in truth speak for myself, Trevor, and say that I really will get around to it and take it every bit as seriously as I know you do."
She could still remember his smile. He worked so hard that day and wouldn't even stop for a Kool-Aid break but once. And when he finished, she tried to slip a $5 bill in his hand, above and beyond and in no way connected to paying it forward. But he wouldn't hear of it. He worked all weekend, and 4 after-school and after-paper route days on the garden, and said next week he would come around and paint her fence and window boxes and porch railing with 2 fresh coats of white. She wondered if her son Richard would notice the difference. She walked to the grocery store slowly, loosening her tight joints and muscles as they warmed to the strain. Just to get out of the house. Imagine the sadness in that, when your son comes to visit and you mostly wish to be somewhere else. It was late dusk on the Camino, with the car headlights glowing spooky in the half-light as she pulled her little 2-wheeled wire cart behind her over the sidewalk cracks. Mrs. Greenberg always took the same route to the same store, being comforted by sameness. Terry was working as a checker that evening, and Matt as a bagger, 2 of her favorite people in the world. No more than 20 either of them, but quick with a smile for an older woman. No condescension, always thinking to ask about her day, her arthritis, and still listening when she gave the answer. She bought 12 cans of cat food and a 5-pound bag of dry cat chow for the strays who counted on her, and cherry Kool-Aid for the boy, and Richard's favorite brand of beer, and tea and skinless chicken breasts and bran cereal for herself. All the while thinking, Terry and Matt, that's 2 who probably could be counted on to pass it along, and maybe that nice lady at the North County Cat Shelter would make a fitting 3rd. Richard would have a cow, but maybe tough love was just what he needed. And with that thought fresh in her mind, she returned to the cooler and put his beer back on the shelf. He could drink Kool-Aid or iced tea, or go home and take his smoke and his money problems with him.
"Good evening, Mrs. Greenberg,"
Terry said, running the groceries across the scanner.
"I drove by your house today. The garden looks wonderful."
It pleased her in an uplifting way, like a dance with a good-looking boy in high school, that someone besides herself should notice and care.
"Oh, isn't it wonderful?" she said. "Trevor McKinney did all that. Such a good boy. Do you know him?"
Terry didn't imagine that she did, but it obviously pleased her to see Mrs. Greenberg so beaming. And Matt, too, who mirrored back her own smile as he bagged her cat food. He had one of those modern hairstyles, Matt. A handsome boy with hair shaved high up onto his scalp and longer on top, but always clean, with a fresh look to say, "I'm modern, not a punk."
"Nice to see you so happy tonight, Mrs. Greenberg."
He loaded her little cart carefully so it would balance just right. It would be nice to see Matt happy, too, though by design she would not be around to see it. Young people needed a little nest egg, for college maybe, though it would not be enough for tuition, maybe books and clothes or whatever they might choose to spend it for, because she felt they could both be trusted. And that nice lady at the cat shelter, she would put it right back into spaying and neutering and other vet costs. No doubting her priorities. Yes, she thought, back out in the crisp, clean-smelling night. It's right. She'd make the calls first thing in the morning. Her chest first began to hurt on the way home. Not her heart, but more her lungs, like a bad congestion. And she stopped often to catch her breath. She was not such an old woman, she had to remind herself, just over retirement age. But since losing Martin, her body seemed to turn in on itself, as though it couldn't wait. As though her immunities no longer cared to protect her, but meant to hasten her along. The arthritis had tripled its hold since then, and she'd catch any little thing that was going around. Stopping often to rest, she took a detour, which she never did, by Trevor McKinney's house. Such a nice little house, with a curvy shingle roof, heavy with vegetation, but never overgrown looking. Too bad about that twisted, awful thing in her driveway, looking like the spooky remains of an ugly death on the highway. Mrs. Greenberg imagined his mother must want it gone, want the simple beauty of her place back, maybe even dreamed of it the way she herself had dreamed for her garden. They had company tonight, she saw, stopping for breath at the walkway. A white Volkswagen Beetle, nicely cared for, parked out front. A new boyfriend. Oh, good. She'd seen the old one, didn't think much of the type. And she could see, through the window, into the brightly lit dining room, the right side of his face in profile. A well-dressed black man, so handsome and refined. Well, good then. Good for them. Mrs. Greenberg hoped Trevor's mother wouldn't listen to anybody, wouldn't let any small minds get in her way. They had tried to tell her not to marry Martin because he was a Jewish boy, but she wouldn't listen, and he'd been the best husband a woman could ask for. A good man is a good man. Maybe Trevor's mother would get married. Nice for the boy if she did. She'd never met Trevor's mother, but knew she would like her, because look what she had produced with her own womb and her loving care. A boy who could love a garden for a sick, arthritic woman who couldn't love it enough.
"You have a good woman there,"
she said quietly, out loud, to the handsome, refined man in the window, who, of course, did not hear.
"A good woman with a good boy. You take care of them. I know you will."
When she arrived home at last, winded and sore-chested, Richard was blissfully gone. She took a hot bath and laid herself, coughing, to bed, knowing that whatever happened now, the garden was tended. The porch would take a coat of paint. Tomorrow, she'd make some calls, some arrangements. After that, it didn't matter. Even if the thing that latched onto her next was a bad one, pneumonia or the Asian flu. Even if she couldn't pull through this time, it wouldn't matter. Everything was tended, or would be by then. Sleep felt heavy and all-consuming, like the comforting mouth of death as she imagined it, holding as it did her Martin and a long, much-deserved rest. Chapter 8 Arlene. She slipped in to say goodnight to Trevor the minute Mr. St. Clair left,
and he didn't leave a moment too soon. What was it, anyway, about that man that always made her feel she was missing the boat on something? And why couldn't she shake the notion that he was doing it on purpose? Trevor lay on his bed, doing homework in his lap.
Gotta go to work, honey. You still got the number by the phone?
Sure, Mom.
And Loretta's?
No, by heart. You know I'm not scared. I never am.
I know, honey. But I am.
I'm a big kid, Mom.
You sure are, honey.
That you are.
She sat on the edge of his bed, combing curly strands of hair off his forehead with her fingers. She knew he probably didn't like it, smacking as it did of the preening one gives a much younger child. But he did not complain. He looked so much like his daddy, it was spooky, even with his eyes cast down. And if he'd raised them right at that moment to look into her own, she might have had to look away. He never did, though.
Honey? Yeah, Mom?
You weren't trying to...
What?
No, never mind. I gotta go.
No, really? What?
You weren't trying to, fix me up with Mr. St. Clair, were you?
I was pretty sure you weren't.
Those Ricky eyes came up to find her, and she somehow didn't pull away.
Why? Don't you like him?
It hit her in the stomach like a fastball, something she could really feel, to know that he had, even though she wasn't sure why it should seem so important. And then, looking down at Trevor's homework, she saw the sheet of paper with Trevor's idea sketched out on it. Circles like the ones Jerry had drawn in the dirt between comets when they both believed, for a flash of a moment, that a life could really change. Or maybe even two lives. The circles were blank, all except the top three. The first wave. One had Jerry's name written inside, then scratched out, which made Arlene suddenly, overwhelmingly sad, as if his chance had gone up just that quickly. The second said, Mr. St. Clair, also scratched out, which also made her feel something, though she could neither name it nor get along with it. The third said Mrs. Greenberg, which thankfully meant nothing at all. At least, this Mrs. Greenberg wasn't on her way over with flowers, at least not as far as Arlene knew. Her own words didn't sound quite right at first.
Well, actually, Trevor, no. I don't think I do like him. He makes me kind of nervous.
Why, do you like him?
Yeah, sure I do.
Why?
I don't know. I think it's because you can say things to him, and then he says things back. You know, just real simple like that. Whatever you think of, you can just say. That's good, right?
Well, I guess so, but, honey, I just don't get why you would do that.
I think he's lonely, Mom. And I know you are. And you always said you don't judge people by how they look.
No, that's right, you don't.
She learned so much from these little talks with her son. He always swore he'd learned it from her and was only mirroring it back. But somehow the wisdom of her own advice surprised her as it came out of his mouth and left her wondering if she was wise enough to heed it. It happened this way every time.
And it's not that at all, honey. It's not about looks in any way. It's just that, well, you know as well as anybody that your daddy will be back one of these days.
He didn't answer at first, just looked up at her with an expression that crystallized like ice around her diaphragm. It made it hard for her to breathe. If pressed to put words to it, she'd be tempted to call it a look of pity. But surely he hadn't meant to be as harsh as all that.
Mom.
She so didn't want to hear the next thing he'd say, but felt too tongue-tied to stave it off.
Mom, it's been more than a year.
So?
Mom, he's not coming back.
And she'd been so careful to never let those words pollute her home, not even in the chasm of her own tired brain, not even in the silence of 4 o'clock in the sleepless morning. But now, here they were, having to be fought with desperate means. So Arlene did something she'd never done, not in 12 years. She raised the back of her hand to her own son and cracked him across the mouth.
She tried to stop the hand before it quite hit home, but it was too mindless by then, too bent on relief. Or maybe the signal didn't go through in time.